My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, Malcolm Gaskill knew two things about his great-uncle Ralph's wartime adventures. He'd been a prisoner in Italy, and he'd cut his way out of a train with a knife and fork. Can't wait to hear about that piece. Apart from that, he'd faded into family folklore until one hot afternoon in an English country garden, a chance conversation set Malcolm on his uncle's trail. He's here to tell us all about it. Great to have you joining us, Malcolm.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Selena.
Now, I definitely want to know about the knife and fork, and I definitely want to know about your great uncle Ralph. But first of all, who were you talking to in the country garden?
Well, this was my mum, who's now in her 90s, and it was just one of those kind of, you know, just a chance sort of casual conversation where my mum said she'd had this dream about Uncle Ralph. And although I didn't expect it at the time, that set me on this incredible journey to discover who he was and what he'd done during the Second World War.
Our ancestors have got some great stories to tell, and I'm glad people like you bring them to life, because otherwise they get forgotten. So tell us about him then. What did you learn?
Well, he's quite a mysterious man, really. I'm not actually sure I ever met him. And if I did, it was very briefly when I was a child. I don't remember it. But he was, he'd been a policeman before the Second World War, and also a regular soldier. And then when the war came along, he was called up again and became a military policeman. He was sent off to North Africa, where he was captured in 1942, and then sent from North Africa to Italy, where he was put into a prisoner of war camp. Now, I kind of remember a little bit of that as a child, but, you know, really not very much. And so there was an awful lot more to discover, fortunately, enough, as it turns out, to fill a book. So really, a lot of the book is about just trying to build on this memory I had from the age of seven, and more than half a century ago, and actually turn it into the recovery of an entire life. Again, of this man I didn't really know at all, but turns out to be both a kind of everyman from the Second World War, but an individual as well, someone with his own kind of, you know, complex story and his own complex characteristics, like the rest of us, I guess.
And how did you do that, Malcolm? I mean, I've started a few times trying to trace my family tree and always gave up at about the second hurdle. You know, where'd you start?
Well, I was incredibly lucky. The starting point was that I'd heard in the family that he'd left a diary. It turned out not to be a diary. I managed to get hold of it. My mother's cousin had it in her attic. It was a memoir, but it was something he'd written a little bit after the event, when he was in hiding right at the end of the war. And it's an account of an escape. And I think without that, I probably wouldn't have had that much to write about, because that really, you know, he writes in tremendous detail. And it's a very exciting, gripping way about how he escapes from this prisoner of war camp. And although that story kind of comes to a halt, it really gave me the momentum to carry on going through the archives, going to Italy, finding people, amazingly, who knew about this story, and piecing it all together that way.
Wow, incredible. So tell us about the knife and fork. What was that about?
Yeah, well, it's something which you see in war films. I mean, they actually do something like it in the Frank Sinatra film, Von Ryan's Express. So I thought when my nana told me this in the 1970s, maybe she was getting a kind of, you know, it was a slightly sort of fantastical thing where she's sort of conflated what she'd seen in a war film with what Ralph had told her. But actually going to the archives, going to the National Archives in London and finding a report that Ralph made at the end of the war and with his escaping partner, who was a man called Charlie West, it's very plain that that's exactly what they did. They used table cutlery to lever up a plank in the bottom of a train that was taking them from Italy to Germany after the Italians left the war, and that's how they got out. And it turns out other men did the same thing. It wasn't typical, but it wasn't unique either, which again shows that it was certainly a possible thing for them to do.
And once he had escaped, what did he do then? Did he stay in Italy?
Well, the first time they escaped was in the south of Italy, and they got recaptured. They had great plans, but you know, it looked good on paper, but they gradually ran out of steam and they were recaptured. But then when they were sent to the north, and then they were the Italy left the war, the Germans took over, and they shipped all these prisoners. The idea was they were short of manpower in Germany, so they were shipping them north, and they and Ralph and Charlie got out of the train, and they were never recaptured. They went into hiding in a sort of a hut in a vineyard for about 5 weeks, and from there went up into the hills, and they were never recaptured.
Wow, I've got here. He had to assume an entire new identity.
He did. I mean, a lot of these men who did go out, they really didn't know exactly where they were going. They had a choice whether they would try to go through the Alps to Switzerland or whether they would go south and try and reach the Allied lines. Ralph tries both, but in the end, he goes and lives with a family in northern Italy, knocks at the door, they take him in. And yes, as you say, he becomes one of them. There is this incredible transformation where he dresses like them. And as I discovered, he speaks not just fluent Italian, but fluent dialect as well, and he lives as they do. And I think that was his, if only a temporary thing, it was an absolute transformation for him, as it was for so many other men who were taken in by these incredibly brave, ordinary and very poor Italian families in the north.
Did you see a lot of Italy? You see a lot of the places that obviously his footsteps would have gone.
Well, this was, again, one of the most incredible things about this as a journey of research, is that I had to go there and, as you say, retrace the footsteps. And I have a very good friend called Domenico, and he came with me because my Italian is not very good. So he was my translator and my driver and everything. So we did these three incredible road trips between 2021 and 2023. So we went all over the place and really saw most of the places where Ralph had been. And again, even found the hiding place I mentioned just now in the vineyard where he'd hidden immediately after he cut his way out of the train. And this building is completely unchanged from the war. So really quite remarkable to actually get inside, open the door, go inside and see precisely where they were, the place that they had described to British intelligence when they finally got back after the war.
And you put photographs like that in the book, and indeed photographs of Great Uncle Ralph.
Yeah, there are a few photos in there. And there is actually a photo of that hiding place, which was a struggle to identify because this is a photo from 1958 and nothing was written on the back, as so true on so many of these photographs. And you have to kind of just work it out. It's really useful to be able to put these things on Facebook. That has an incredible response. And without Facebook, I really couldn't have done this. But yeah, so it's there is this sort of in-between photograph. So there's the story in 1943. There's this picture in 1958 when Ralph went back, it turns out, to visit the people who had looked after him. And then, you know, me going there in 2022. And so you get these kind of looping of time, this strange kind of echo of him sort of haunting himself and then me haunting him, as it were.
Incredible. And yet certain buildings remain the same, as you said.
It's just amazing. Yeah.
So why the title then, Malcolm? Why the Glass Mountain?
So the Glass Mountain comes from a book by a German writer, W.G. Sebald, who wrote in a work he wrote called Austerlitz. And he talked about the Glass Mountain was a metaphor for this massive lens through which we look back at the past, but of course it's transparent, but it's cloudy, and the past lies on the other side of it. So everything we see is kind of partial and distorted. And Sebald said, you know, when memories come back to you, you sometimes feel as if you were looking at the past through a glass mountain, and that's really what he meant, that we're forced to look at the past this way, but we only get a kind of an incomplete picture. So that's where the title came from. But it also kind of worked quite well because so much of the second half of the book is really about mountains too. There's the imagery of mountains runs right throughout the book.
Do you feel like you've got to know Great Uncle Ralph through doing the book?
I think I got to know him better than anybody else. He's rather a kind of I think so. He was rather a buttoned up kind of man. And my mother remembers him very well and said he was quite cold and stiff and rather unemotional. So really, particularly because of the relationship he had with the Italian families he stayed with, I kind of got to see another side of him. So I think I've seen all the facets that he presented to the world as they're recorded in different places. And I think I do know him. I think in some ways I know him better than his own wife did, my Auntie Flo, because I think he didn't necessarily tell her everything, particularly about where he was, because it does seem that he did rather enjoy himself when he was living in Italy, and he does slightly go off the radar. Because over 10,000 men who walked off after the Italians left the war did actually manage to make it through Switzerland or to the Allied lines. But I think Ralph had the opportunity, but he just kind of, kept his head down and then went home at the end. So, of course, as you'd imagine, he'd got home very late. He'd got home, 18 months late. And I'm sure that she, like others, perhaps wanted to ask the question, where on earth have you been? There was definitely this side to him. He was an enigma.
He sounds like it. And I'm sure he's looking down on you with great pride because he probably wanted to publish a memoir himself. But back then...
I do hope so. I hope I've done him proud.
I think you will have. This is not your first book. I believe you also have The Ruin of All Witches.
Oh, I've written a few books, and they've mostly all been about the history of witchcraft. I'm actually a historian of the 17th century, so I've written about witch trials and witchcraft beliefs. So this was a bit of a departure for me. And again, it was usually the books before I've kind of decided to write them, and there's something about The Glass Mountain felt more like it kind of decided it chose me. So it carried me very much from the 17th century into the 20th century. And of course, it's a very different thing from what I've done before because it's very personal to me. And so I become a character in my own book, which I think, as any writer would tell you, feels kind of a slightly unsettling, maybe even self-indulgent thing to do. But because this is a story about discovery, that was absolutely inevitable. And the book is also not just about Ralph and Charlie during the war, but it's about my friendship with my Italian friend Domenico and the travels that we go on and the way that those two stories slightly intertwine and mirror each other.
Yeah, you must have bonded spending so much time together traveling.
Well, we did very much so. And actually, one of the things that Ralph talks about during in his escapes with Charlie is that they kind of got this almost telepathic thing going where they kind of knew what the other person was thinking. And the time that I spent with Domenico researching this, it was exactly the same. We sort of started second guessing what the other one was thinking because we're often under constraints of time and we were doing this field work and trying to track people down. And so we did become very close and we are really very, very good friends now. And so, and that to me is as important a discovery as what I discovered about Ralph, even though I could never, ever have predicted that starting out.
Yeah, incredible story. And these stories matter so much. Well, we're selling the book right now on our website, tre.radio, if our listeners want to go over to our virtual bookshop and actually pre-order, because I believe it's out tomorrow, Malcolm.
It is out. It's actually out on Thursday. But copies are basically available now, I think. I think it's gone out a little bit early.
Well, just to recap, it's called The Glass Mountain, Escape and Discovery in Wartime Italy, and it's by Malcolm Gaskill, who we're talking to now. If people want to find out a bit more about you and your other books, do you have a website or social media?
I do have a Twitter account still, or X account, as I'm supposed to call it. I don't have a website anymore, but if you Google me, there's tons of it. It's nearly all about witches, but you will probably get a sense of the kind of writer I am.
Wonderful. Well, it's great to chat to you, Malcolm, and learn about
lovely
your great uncle Ralph. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Selena.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Bye-bye.